The word management is not easily defined. To one person, it means the act or manner of managing, handling, directing, or controlling. To another person, management means a skill in management, or a kind of inborn executive ability. To a third person, management concerns the person or persons managing an institution or business. Now, obviously, we are talking here about people rather than functions. But one thing is certain. Management concerns itself with people and functions. Now, engineers are usually quite familiar with getting jobs done. Now, what may be new to you is to learn that getting people to carry out objectives, whether they be your objectives or the objectives of the company you work for, can be programmed more or less. Getting things done through people is a good, quick summary of what management is all about. Management, therefore, refers to the functions performed by the people responsible for carrying out certain objectives. In the hierarchy of management of your company, of course, people can mean any number of individuals. The president of your company is certainly a member of management. He is probably most responsible for setting objectives and establishing policies through which those objectives can be reached. Through its top officials, he sees that these policies are followed and that overall objectives of the company are reached. Now, we don't have to belabor the point that in a similar fashion, vice presidents, treasurers, controllers, etc., are all members of the management team. All of these people have to establish policies and set objectives for those who report to them. So, too, are middle managers and administrators considered part of management. They work to achieve company objectives within their own areas. For instance, top management may determine what part of the total transistor market the company will have reached by 1975, while a middle manager may have the responsibility of producing a certain number of transistors during any given year. With that goes the responsibility of controlling operations to make sure that his objectives will be met. Depending on your position, therefore, you will have the responsibility either for the long-range objectives of the company or for the relatively short-range objectives. As an engineer manager, it is important that you know how to organize your work, how to divide and assign the workload, and how to set objectives and reach them. In other words, you have the task of officially coordinating men, machines, and materials in an economical and efficient way. To achieve success on the job, it is necessary for you to understand the five basic management functions. They are, and you might want to jot these down. Here they are: to plan, to organize, to control, to coordinate, and to motivate. Let me go over those again. Plan, organize, control, coordinate, and finally, motivate. Now let's look briefly at each of these. In planning, you lay out a step-by-step system to achieve a specific result. In organizing, you distribute work among those you supervise and set up proper work relationships among them. In coordinating, you unite people, equipment, and materials and adjust time so that everything is directed toward a common objective. Controlling means that you have ways to measure the performance of workers you are responsible for, and this helps you to regulate production toward the goals you have in mind. And finally, motivating. Motivating, which is often neglected, means that you stimulate those who work under your command to produce the results and to work together toward your common objectives. Now, there's nothing magic in these five functions. They do not in themselves get your job done, however. What brings about desired results is your ability to harness them for your purposes. These activities are day-to-day things, which you do as part of your job. Usually, we call these activities responsibilities. That is, they are things for which you are held responsible. Just what are some of these typical responsibilities that engineer managers perform? They could encompass grievances among your fellow workers, controlling quality, maintaining safe working conditions, improving methods, and even what we might call good housekeeping. In watching over such mundane but important matters, you must supervise others. A supervisor or manager is one who oversees the work of others. Therefore, if you have even one person working under you, you are a manager. And as a manager, you have to wear a thick skin and a light heart. You cannot hold yourself beyond such criticisms as, if you're pleasant, some will say you're too familiar. If you try to look sober-faced, others will call you a sourpuss. If you're young, they'll say you don't know anything. If you're old, you're passé. If you talk to everybody, they'll say you're a gossip, and if you talk to no one, you're a snob. And if you're a stickler about the rules in the plant, they'll call you a bureaucrat. If you overlook the rules, well, then you're just inefficient. Maybe in reality, you're all of these. Maybe you're none. But it is possible to be quite definite in some qualities that will make you a good engineering manager, and here they are. One, you know theory as well as practicality. You understand all jobs you supervise. Two, in talking to your men, you explain not only how, but why things should be done. Three, in giving directions, you do so in a reasonably friendly fashion, without shouting or yelling. And four, you show foresight in planning and delegating work in advance. You keep subordinates occupied in useful work, and you assign that work fairly. Five, you maintain consistent standards of personal conduct, job performance, and product quality. Six, you keep up with each man's work, judge workers on merit only, and you take pains to let each one know where he stands at all times. Seven, you appreciate and acknowledge, especially in writing, honest effort and above-average work. You also, of course, hold persons responsible for inferior work. Eight, you maintain discipline fairly and consistently. You're tactful when you're forced to discipline a worker, and you do it in private. Above all, you readily listen to the worker's side of the story and don't lose your temper during the meeting. Now, let's look at a few fundamentals of organization. No person should have more than one boss. You open yourself up to all kinds of confusion and inefficiency due to duplication of effort, misunderstandings, and petty criticisms. And so far as possible, every manager should have approximately the same number of people working under him. The number of subordinates one can officially control depends, of course, on the extent of their duties and responsibilities. Theoretically, you should have no fewer than three and no more than seven subordinates. This does not always work out in practice, especially if you are part of an organization that is growing rapidly. If you happen to have more than seven subordinates, the wisest plan would be to divide these into two or three more manageable groups. Also, if at all possible, select one member of each group as a leader. There are outstanding individuals who can be developed as leaders, and it is wise for you to delegate some of your responsibilities and authority to such leaders. If you do so, you accomplish actually a tighter control, and you also develop assistance for higher echelon jobs. Now, you can adapt systems planning to control of your subordinates. At periodic intervals, for instance, require that reports be given to you. Based on these reports, take whatever action is needed to progress towards your objective. Specify in a flowchart when these reports are due. Now, let's look at some essential aspects of production. Setting standards of quantity and quality are important in any consideration of production. Let's look, for instance, at the owner of a small plant that manufactures ceramics and semiconductors. The owner is confronted with the choice of either lowering costs, increasing sales, or laying off some workers. Production may vary greatly between any two employees who are on the production line. One worker can turn out 10,000 ceramic cases a day, while another turns out only 8,000. As a manager, it is your job to know that such production does vary. Keeping meticulous records will help you determine where you stand. The ideal standard of quantity of production is a point a little above what the average worker can do easily day after day. Quantity standards are much harder to set on non-repetitive work, such as maintenance repairs or salvage operations. If the work performance is measured accurately, however, and recorded properly, a reliable estimate of man-hours used on specific tasks can be made. Data collected over a period of time provide a means of eliminating guesswork that often goes into planning new projects. What are some techniques for measuring performance? It is important to keep in mind at the outset that much of this paper control could degenerate into busy work. Report forms, record forms, and manuals of procedure and policy often become outdated. The moral for you is that you should constantly review forms and procedures and replace or eliminate outdated ones or those no one is using. This review phase of control is often overlooked. Wherever you can, set up data graphically. Your superiors will appreciate the consideration you show in communicating with them in the most effective fashion. Typically, you can graph such factors as distribution of accidents, hirings versus separations, overtime costs, direct labor costs, job order releases, amount of scrap, volume of maintenance repairs, profits and losses. Now, let me say a word about motivation. Nothing can be more important from a management point of view. People are unique, and they are the most important resources of any organization, computers notwithstanding. Highly motivated people can even make a poor organization operate successfully. On the other hand, poorly motivated people can ruin a sound organization. Now, the task is not easy. Your goal is to maintain and create a desire in each subordinate to work with you toward a common goal with enthusiasm and creativity. Every contract you make with a subordinate is an opportunity in this direction. One way to understand the complexities of motivation is to look into yourself. What moves you to act in a certain way? People are different and react differently. It's almost a cliche to say that each of us desires status, whether it be financial or otherwise. And more than that, we each have a deep-seated drive to excel. If you can stimulate that kind of achievement in any of your subordinates, you will be on your way to mastering the key to motivation. How can you do this? Well, certainly compliments are desirable. That is, when they're truly deserved. A false compliment is just as bad as none. Setting obtainable goals for subordinates is another way of helping each subordinate show what he can do for his own sake, if not yours. All of us, too, have strongly developed intellectual curiosity, a need to find out all that there is to know about one's field. Of course, no one can know all there is to know about electronics or aerospace or marine biology, but the desire is there, and you as a manager can contribute to that desire. Setting up special seminars or guest lectures is one way. You'll probably recall that in first-year psychology, in addition to obvious physical needs, there are psychological needs such as love, self-esteem, recognition, achievement, security. Bear in mind that each of your subordinates, like yourself, must first satisfy these basic needs before they can look for satisfaction in any other way, even monetary. If at all possible, your job as manager is to match the satisfaction of your subordinates' needs to the company's goals. Now, they need not be mutually exclusive. For instance, a company intending to develop an economical desalination process by 1973 could interest an engineer who has knowledge of marine biology and wants to develop that knowledge. To be an effective manager, know how to plan by results, know how to organize for effective control, and how to set standards of production, and how to achieve and exceed them. This is not all there is to management, but it does comprise a roller coaster purview of the field. If you are interested in becoming a specialist engineer, an engineering consultant, a liaison engineer, a supervising engineer, or some other, you must demonstrate your understanding of these concepts. Are you suitable for such responsibility? If you have a pencil and paper handy, you may check yourself by answering yes or no to the following questions. 1. Do you express interest in people and their problems at least as much as you do in meters and computers and machines? 2. Are you as impartial as possible in all dealings with people? 3. Do you treat everyone as an individual? 4. Have you demonstrated that you can show appreciation whenever it is deserved? 5. Can you be firm and fair in dealing with others? And 6. Do you look for what others can do and not for what you want? If your answer is yes to all these questions, you're probably quite suitable for a management position. If you have answered no to one or more of them, then take a good, hard look at yourself and where you want to go, and replay this tape a few more times up to this point before you go on. One of your responsibilities as an engineer manager is to look to the future as well as to daily functions. An effective way to do this is through the management by objectives concept. If anything in engineering is simple, management by objectives is. Undoubtedly, you have already used the management by objective process without calling it by that name, and it doesn't matter what field your management pertains to, whether it be aerospace, broadcast transmissions, systems engineering, solid-state circuitry, or information theory. Knowing a little bit about management by objectives can save you an awful lot of sweat. Here is what it's all about, and incidentally, you may want to keep some paper handy so that you can jot down these pertinent features. To start the process, you identify a goal towards which you want to move. The goal should be stated in such a way that you will know when you've reached it. If you want to take a trip, for example, to the IEEE convention in New York City, you make plans accordingly. The obvious goal is to get to New York City first, but you can break down that objective as far as the precise time of arrival, which day, what means of transportation you're going to use, where you are going to stay, and how long you will stay, and so forth. Using management by objectives in engineering management means that you describe an objective as a point at which you want to be at a specified time. An example of a specified objective might be to reduce turnover of data processing programmers by 7% by June of next year. This, now you will note, has in it the 7% and the date June of a specified year. Another way to describe an objective is to have it specify what conditions will exist when the job is completed. If, to take another case, you wish to introduce a new type of semiconductor to those who will sell it, your objective might sound like this. To provide 126 salespeople with support literature and advertising materials and your company marketing plan for the new type semiconductor by October 15th. Did you hear the conditions that will prevail when you achieve this objective? They are 126 agents will have materials and a plan. The kind of objective which describes end results is frequently used. Here's one that does just that. To rearrange the layout of a part of a factory where integrated circuits are fabricated by October 20th, so that one more assembly line can be set up and double the daily quantity of integrated circuits can be produced. The purpose in setting an objective is to give you a target to aim for. Sometimes the system is called target setting. And when you know your objectives, you will know what you are trying to do. Well, so what, you ask? The important thing is that by knowing what you want to do, you can organize your time and your resources to achieve it. But even more, you will have a way of assessing your own or your subordinate's performance. Having specific objectives, such as the one adding an assembly line to double the quantity of integrated circuits, you will be able to tell when you have reached the objective. Reaching your objectives and accomplishing them by a stated time is rarer than you might think. It reduces the waste of manpower and enables your company to get more done at less cost. There are few things more frustrating than playing a game or doing a job without knowing whether you're winning or losing, moving ahead or slipping backwards. Setting a specific goal or objective that is observable and measurable will act like a reference point against which you can determine your direction and your movement.
This ends side one of this cassette program. To continue, stop the machine, turn the cassette over, and you should be correctly cued for side two.